This is Digital Story Podcast number 863, October 4th, 2022. Today's theme is Inside a Group Photo Presentation. I'm Derek Story. Have you ever wondered what it's like to have your images projected on a screen in front of a group of photographers? What would they say? Would it be fun or nerve-wracking? In this week's TDS Photography Podcast, I bring you inside a group presentation that took place in the Eastern Sierra. I think you'll find it fascinating. All of that and more on today's show. So this is fun. After hanging out together, traveling all over the place on 395, this group of photographers convened on Friday afternoon. So we had been up there since Monday. We convened on Friday afternoon for the group presentation. Now, each member of the group put together 8 photos that they wanted to talk about. And they could be their favorite photos. They could be photos that had something that they worked really hard on that maybe turned out or maybe didn't turn out. It could be an image or images where they want feedback from other photographers, which is really hard to get, right? I mean, we can post images online and we can get a thumbs up and all that good stuff, or we can show them to friends and family. And generally speaking, they think we're pretty good, but maybe they can't articulate why they think that image is workable, or why maybe it could use a little improvement, things like that. And that is what you get when you present your images to other photographers. Now, the cool thing, the magic that makes this work, is that we have been spending all this time together. We have been breaking bread together. You know, we've been up before dawn together and out in the weather after the sun had set. So by this time, everyone knows everyone's pretty comfortable and trusts each other. And that's what makes the presentation work. Now, what I thought would be fun, because I know a lot of people are curious about this aspect of the workshops, is to sit in during an actual conversation during the presentation. Up on the screen, we have some of Harold's photos. And Harold has worked with us on a number of workshops, and he has his images up on the screen, and we have conversation, real conversation, going on about what's happening. And I just think it's fascinating to be a fly on the wall while these photographers absorb what they're seeing and then comment, convey their impressions, their suggestions for improvements, all that good stuff. So this is only about an 11-minute clip because I don't want to go on and on with this, but it will be fun to just sit in for a few minutes and hear what these photographers have to say. Once that is over, I'll come back on and we'll go from there.
Very nice shoot.
Eva's first photograph, and this is...
Yeah, a little more of the picnic table.
Yeah, I shot this several ways, but I wanted to get the picnic table.
And I wanted to get the cloud reflection.
This rarely happens.
The two shots are so close.
And different.
And I also had a neutral density filter on to slow down the water.
Oh.
Yeah, but not a very strong one.
Not much. Two stops.
You're a little wider than what you...
Mm-hmm. But again, what I wanted is, as I saw the V going out to the mountain.
Yeah, that's what initially drew your eye to the composition.
Yep. You know what would have been a great picture, or a great fun picture? Have a couple of us on the picnic table, like we're sitting there just having...
Harold, did you crop the bottom to get that one rock out of the image?
Yeah. Okay. Actually, no, I cropped it in the camera. I didn't.
You adjusted your foot.
Your frame up just a bit.
Yeah.
Did you brighten the picnic table?
No, I brightened the mountain.
Are you the one that mentioned that Ava should brighten her picnic table?
No.
I can't remember.
So. No, it was sort of an interesting curiosity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The key for me was the reflection of the clouds and going to the mountain.
No, I understand. Yeah. But again, comparing this to Ava's, the picnic bench here is a little bit brighter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can get a
well, well, actually, I brighten the mountain and I brighten that right hillside.
Yeah.
And bro, there's a, and to some degree, brighten the picnic table.
Yeah, but that, anyway, it draws your eye a little bit more, but not so much as to distract.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun.
But I love the rocks.
Yeah.
We'll put those rocks there. Why?
I was going down there, I think it's because
there's where you're standing there, I think that's the outlet to the creek.
And so yeah, imagine the other side, there's the creek. Yeah.
And I bet you that what they did is they put the stones there to make sure no debris, to limit the amount of debris that went forward.
Or the boats from accidentally going down.
Well, the picnic table, a dock.
Kayakers.
Oh, nice. That's some autumn stuff.
Now,
right
this
there.
Is just to the left, mm-hmm. and this is 560 infrared.
Oh my gosh.
And what always amazes me is if you look at the reflection of the mountain, the infrared reflects there too.
I know, that is amazing to me too.
Wow.
And it was, this is shifting the colors in Capture One. And I just like the orange as opposed to anything else. And the beauty of using infrared is you can see vegetation where the eye doesn't see vegetation.
Because of the color.
Really? I mean, that whole side of the mountain. Mm-hmm. If you look at invisible light, mm-hmm. it's gray.
That's a good point.
Wow.
It's also how you're able to do a little bit of a seasonal shift.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
What's that? Dog.
The what?
Shadow. Oh, it's shadow.
What's for that?
Oh, I can see
that. Is that a part of the mountain? Is that a cloud or is that part of the mountain?
No, it's a shadow thrown by a ridge.
So the white part of the mountain versus the red is because of vegetation?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the orange vegetation on the right side?
No. The orange is all what's reflected.
Look at the bottom of those rocks. That's algae. So I picked that.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I've taken pictures
along,
in Hawaii, and there's sort of nondescript rock, lava stuff.
Yeah. Well,
it all lights up.
Wow.
Because there's all sorts of algae in the rock. Mm. Anyway, that's one of the things I like about infrared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this shot's also interesting because sometimes people think infrared is just this weird, wild, wacky.
I always think black and white.
Space colors and all that.
Space colors.
But, like here, this is, if you just didn't know that was infrared.
It'd be a color photo.
Yeah, it'd be a color photo. Right?
And the real secret dealing with it is get the sky blue.
Yes. Yeah, because that's. If you do that, then the viewer will believe almost everything else.
Yeah, that's what struck me at the beginning. Is like the first thing I saw was this is really, white balance-wise, is really on the warm side.
Yeah.
And it was warmer than I remember seeing it. But then I thought, the water and the sky are still blue, so how did you manage that? And then you said,
you've got to be very careful with your red blue shift.
Yeah.
And the secret is, when you do the color shift, you always do red to blue first. So you get the blue right. Mm-hmm. Then after that, when you do blue to red, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. So when you have a moment, because this is a really good shot, make sure you take this out right here.
What is that? Stick?
It's a stick.
Yeah. Oh.
You got to know the stick right there. And if you clean up that bottom, you have a really, really cool shot.
I didn't even see that.
Yeah.
After that, get rid of that rock too. The one that you said you would keep on
the little rock.
Davis.
I don't know. It doesn't.
This little guy.
Yeah, the one.
I like him.
Well, it's that big blue patch that looks good, at least for me.
Yeah.
And between blue and the colors, it's like wow.
We'll go to the next photo.
Okay.
Oh, look at that! How different is that?
Same photo.
Mm-hmm. Tree.
I really like it in black and white.
Yeah.
Did you do this with a filter or a converted camera?
Converted.
It's a converted camera, but all I did was. took it into, again, it's Capture One, I just converted, no, I take that back. I took the RAW into Adobe Photo RAW, because the Adobe Photo RAW filters are the same as Nick. And
oh, really?
And then brought it back in Capture One.
You know,
how different is both of them when you look at each? Like, holy crud, completely different. And I keep the RAW to this one.
Can you switch back real quick, Terry,
yes,
to the first one?
Look at that, okay. Freaking sweet.
It looks like it rotates when you switch
may have to do with the... If this one in the Capture One was auto-level, and the other one, I didn't notice it wasn't level, so I just...
But you'd never know if you didn't see this one.
Yeah.
How interesting.
Wow.
Look at the foliage. That's
nice.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I tend to like this black and white treatment better.
Yeah, I'm crazy about this cloud up here.
Yeah.
I love it. This whole thing.
The stick is red white.
What I will do with a lot of photographs is I may have an invisible light and then ultraviolet, and I'll double frame them. But this one, I think I'll double frame color in black and white.
Yeah, it's really... And, you know, Ava, for whatever reason these rocks are here, they're sure nice for foreground elements.
Mm-hmm.
They're really nice.
So did you take the stick out of this one, too?
Yeah. It's not as distracting, but
it's still
get rid of it.
Yeah, you can do a little healing brush there. Wham, bam.
These are
lovely.
Very
both
nice.
Of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Oh. I remember this moment.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this is just sunset.
Sunrise.
It's
right before sunrise.
Yeah. And I warmed it up a little bit on the top.
Yeah.
And lightened it up a little bit on the bottom, just so you could get the reflection of the rock.
I like the perspective, kind of wide, you know, down low.
Mm-hmm.
That's...
I mean, Tufa...
Okay, I got it.
Got it? Tufa's so interesting because, like, in this shot, it's really cool and fun to look at. And it can be so ugly from about 10 o'clock. Really, truly ugly.
Yeah.
But here, it's just neat.
Yeah.
This has some nice layers.
Look at this.
What's interesting is how it goes from the blue to the red orange to the green,
mm-hmm.
back to the blue.
Ava?
Oh.
You were going to say something?
Okay,
I
said
it.
Oh.
We can see the grass too.
I don't know. The, just a quick comment. For me, the bottom third of the image just is a little too messy on the shore there. And I would wonder if I would crop up to that first line of boulders. Maybe just below that and get rid of a lot of the excess.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just a matter of taste.
I agree with that.
I had a couple of different shots. What I really wanted was the profile of the mountains.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the shot has a lot of depth. So,
It definitely tells you depth, for sure.
Yeah, wherever you draw that line on the foreground elements. I mean, I do see what you're saying, but they're such pretty rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the very bottom foreground rocks are fine, but that middle, that in-between section is kind of, for me, it's just
on the
messy.
Left side.
It just feels messy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's a matter of taste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
That's a messy face.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, a messy place is Bodie. That's a messy place. People leave their trash everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's been there for 100 years.
Yeah.
Light painting?
Yeah, and this was done with an iPhone.
Wow.
Because with the iPhone, the foreground and the sky were both properly exposed. And I got in and said to myself, well, why don't I just take my flashlight? Put it on that. So one hand I held the flashlight, the other hand I held the iPhone.
All right, a big thanks to Jim Kuzman for recording that during our presentation. And I just thought it would be fun. I hope you enjoyed it. That is very typical of how these conversations go during our workshops. And, you know, if you ever had any concern about that aspect of our physical workshops, let me assure you, it is rewarding, it is fun, and is beneficial. And I think by listening to that, you get a feel for what I'm talking about. Thanks to everyone in the workshop for their contributions. You were a great group to work with, and I so appreciate each and every one of you. How do you critique your own photos? So interestingly enough, this article showed up on F-Stoppers right after I decided that I wanted to share some of the group presentation. Because when you're not at a workshop, right, how do you critique your own photos? How do you, you know, find a way to be semi-objective about your own work? Now, I have the link in the show notes to the entire article on F-Stoppers that also includes a video that you may want to watch. I think this is very helpful. Let me read you a little bit about what they say on F-Stoppers about this idea. One of the toughest parts of being a photographer is learning how to be objective about your own work. It's not fun to be brutally honest about photos you have invested a lot of time and effort in. But if you want to grow as a creative and put your best foot forward professionally, it is something that you have to master. This excellent video tutorial features an experienced landscape photographer discuss how to go about critiquing your own work. Coming to you from Alistair Benn with Expressive Photography, this great video tutorial discusses the topic of learning to critique your own work. No doubt, this is not something most of us enjoy doing, but it is a crucial skill, particularly if you are a professional. Unfortunately, if your portfolio features 20 great images and one questionable one, that single bad photo will stick in the minds of potential clients and sink you. As much as we sometimes get attached to our own work, it is important that we be brutally honest about the quality before we present it to the world. Check out this video for the full rundown from Ben. And it is a good video, and it really introduces some ideas that I think are helpful when we're looking at our own work. You know, one thing that we talked about during our presentations is that when we edit our work, and especially as we edit deep into the night, that sometimes, you know, we go too far with our edits. We add too much sharpening, too much saturation, things like that. And it's really good to have a cool off period before you move the image on or post it or whatever you're going to do with it. So you edit for a bit, and then when you think you're at a stopping point, you take a break from it. Take a break, a half an hour break. Take a evening break from it. Look at it the next morning, and then see what you think. By taking that break before you actually move the image along, that'll give you a chance to better gauge if you've gone too far with your editing and maybe you need to back it off a bit, or it could be that maybe you need to do a little bit more. Maybe it needs a little bit more oomph. But that break will help you decide. It's one of the tricks we do to help you decide semi-objectively, right? Semi-objectively, if you're truly done with the image or if you need to do something else. The new Nimble Photographer Weekly newsletter. So this project is fun, I have to tell you. Last week, the one that I ran featured some imagery from the Eastern Sierra. We had an Apple Watch tip. We had a TDS outtake. And then every week, there's going to be something different. The newsletter publishes on Thursdays. It'll be every Thursday, just like the podcast is on Tuesday. And it's kind of fun. So we do the podcast on Tuesday, and then maybe stuff that happens between Tuesday and Thursday, I can include it in the newsletter. But I'm always kind of thinking of what I want to put in the newsletter before that Tuesday podcast even. Some weeks, I run a little photo essay. I write photo essays all the time for different publications, and you may not have seen many of them because they're behind paywalls and so forth. Well, guess what? If you subscribe to the free newsletter, you'll get to see things that I've published that well, previously you had to pay for. That's kind of cool in itself. So anyway, every week will be something new, something fresh, and often something different. If you're interested, all you have to do is go to the show notes and you'll see a big subscribe to the free newsletter, the Nimble Photographer Newsletter, on the Substack platform. You'll see it there. Join us, and I think you will be delighted on what shows up in your inbox every Thursday. Seven Artisans announces a $150 4mm f2.8 APS-C circular fisheye lens for APS-C cameras. And you can read the entire article on DP Review. I have a link in the show notes. This sounds like a fun lens. All right, let me read you what DP Review has to say. Seven Artisans has released its new fully manual 4mm f2.8 circular fisheye lens for APS-C mirrorless camera systems and compatible drones. The lens, which lacks any sort of communication protocols and requires complete manual control, offers roughly 6mm full-frame equivalent focal length with a 225-degree field of view. It is constructed of 10 elements in 8 groups, uses a 7-blade aperture diaphragm, has a minimum focusing distance of 8.5 millimeters, about 3 inches, and uses a de-clicked aperture ring. The lens is made of metal and weighs just 201 grams, about 7 ounces. It's available for Canon EOS M, Fujifilm X, Micro Four Thirds, and Sony E-mount camera systems. Seven Artisans also notes that it can be paired with DJI drones for fisheye images captured from the sky. That sounds kind of fun, doesn't it? The Seven Artisans 4mm f2.8 fisheye lens is available for $150 through the company's online shop. Sometimes you just want this crazy wide view of the location that you're standing in, or you're doing something creative. I know I use the wide-angle lens, the super wide-angle lens on my iPhone for those situations, and this is even wider, right? This is even cooler. It's $150, and we can use it on most of the cameras that are crop sensor, including Micro Four Thirds, which I think is very nice. And it just provides a different point of view. Now, remember, fisheye is a fisheye. In other words, it is not corrected. It has that fisheye look, that distorted look. But it's also a fun look, and especially depending on where you are and how you use it. With a maximum aperture of f2.8, you can use it in a lot of places. Manually focusing is not really an issue with this lens because it is a fisheye, so basically, you'll be in focus almost all of the time. And on Micro Four Thirds, that will be particularly true. So I just thought this is fun for folks that, you know, enjoy that fisheye look, maybe want to add something super wide. I mean, on Micro Four Thirds even, I mean, it starts out as a 4mm. On Micro Four Thirds, it's going to be an 8mm full frame equivalent. And of course, on all the other cameras, it's going to be 6mm. That is wide. That's going to cover a lot of turf. Sounds like fun, and it isn't a huge investment, $150. There has been some testing of this lens already, and it seems to be getting good reviews. So if you're looking for something like that, then check out this article on DP Review, and they'll give you the full scoop and the link to the lens itself. I have a few items for our Virtual Camera Club news. The first thing I want to talk about is that I think it's time that maybe we update the reviews on the Apple Podcast app. Last time that I asked folks if they had time to go over there and post a review, I got some nice ones, and I really appreciate that. But it's funny how quickly time goes by, and now a lot of the reviews are really almost a year old, which is just crazy. And the reason why I like to have more current reviews, because the podcast is current. We're happening every week. There's new stuff every week. And sometimes old reviews make it feel like that, oh, well, maybe he's not as active now as he was a year ago or 2 years ago. So if you have a moment, and if you happen to use the Apple Podcast app, if you would go over there and post a review, I would truly appreciate it. Just helps keep things fresh. And if you use other apps too, such as Spotify or Google Play, any of those, and that happens to be your podcast app, if you would review it there as well, I appreciate it. It just gives potential users a feel for what's going on with this podcast and that we're alive and kicking and having a good time and that we're not something that happened a few years ago. Because remember, a lot of podcasters aren't in it for the long haul. You know, they think it's a great idea. They do podcasting for whatever, 6 months, 9 months, a year, a couple years, and then they just run out of steam. And I think a lot of people think that most podcasts are like that, and ours isn't. You know, we started back in 2005, and we are going as strong as ever, and I'd like to have that vibe associated with the podcast listing, regardless of, you know, which streaming service it shows up on. So folks that have posted reviews in the past, I totally appreciate you doing that. And if you haven't done that and you'd be kind enough to do so on your particular podcast app, I truly appreciate it. Those of you on Apple Podcasts, yes, please, let's get some new reviews up there. And I thank you for the time that you spend doing that. I want to mention that I have tiles for B&H and Amazon on all the pages of the Digital Story. And that if you're going to buy something, especially something that we talk about on one of our shows, if you would just do one extra step and go over to thedigitalstory.com first, find the Amazon tile or the B&H tile that's in the second column there, and click on that. That takes you over to the site, and then you can navigate to, you know, what you're going to buy or what you're shopping for. By doing that, then if you do go ahead and purchase something, that helps support this podcast. And it's no extra cost to you at all, but it really does help this community in this show. And those of you that do that, and we're talking about this at the workshop, many of you do that regularly. I really thank you, because it's super helpful, and it's just another one of those little streams that come in that at the end of the month helps cover the administration costs, the server fees, all that good stuff that comes with running a show every week. I want to give a shout out to our Inner Circle members. I think practically everyone at the workshop was an Inner Circle member. And you know what that means, of course. If you're an Inner Circle member and you sign up for any of our workshops, physical or online, then you get a discount. And the discount is sizable, especially on the physical workshops. It more than covers your fees for a whole year. Actually, it's about 2 years worth. You know, so that one discount basically pays for being an Inner Circle member for a couple of years. And it's just one of those things that I love offering to folks in our community who support us and support all of you and keep the bad ads off the air, right? Being an Inner Circle member has benefits as well as the good feeling that comes with supporting this community. And we're going to have the new slate of workshops going up on the site here. I'm shooting for this month, for October. We'll see. I'm close on many of them. We had some good brainstorming sessions about potential physical workshops up in the Eastern Sierra, and I'm following through on some of those ideas as well. We're going to have online workshops, and those also get discounts by Inner Circle members. So there are many reasons to support this community, support this podcast. That's just one of them. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go over there, take a look, and maybe you will join us in 2022. Thanks so much to our existing Inner Circle members. And finally, I want to acknowledge our good friends at Red River Paper. They are the folks that provide many different types of inkjet printing paper, a variety of sizes, surfaces, all the good stuff that goes with it, everything from fine art cards to envelopes to glassine sleeves. Basically, if you need it for an inkjet printing project, they have it. If you want to do something with scrapbooking, yes, they can help you with that. And one of the things I really like about their site is there's lots of education there. So if you're curious about doing something with your printer, let's say a scrapbooking project, you can find tutorials and information on their site that will help you do that. Everything from the kind of paper that you need, how maybe to use the software to produce the material that you're ultimately going to assemble. All that good stuff is on the site. It's there. And I just think that's terrific because, you know, sometimes you wonder, well, for portrait photography, you know, what kind of paper should I use? Okay, well, they can help you with that. For black and white photography, what looks really good, they can help you with that. Red River Paper, they have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. And they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. And a big thanks to them for supporting the show. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed being a fly on the wall for our photo presentation. I'm working on some more great stuff for next week. Make sure you come back and join me. Until then, stay safe, be creative. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.